Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. Even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marches never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So like, you could just see $600,000
deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. What are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here. Oh, man. He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every packed check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government, plus I had to pay my current taxes. I couldn't get behind on nothing, and I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back. Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know. He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Okay. Before we get into our main talk, we're starting off with a very important Spanish lesson here. The Let me, this is coming. I'm going to read this before we go to Reba. From the United States Treasury Department. And it says, according to a report released last month by the Stanford Latino Entrepreneurship Initiative, the United States is currently home to more than 62.5 million Latinos, representing 19% of the United States population, with an economic output of $2.8 trillion, there's approximately 5 million Latino-owned businesses across the United States, generating over $800 billion in annual revenue. There's a lot more about this online written by the United States Treasury Department. But I think that's motivation enough to get you a Buenos Dias song. I know that's not proper Spanish. Anyway, Buenos Dias.
That was actually pretty good. Buenos Dias. You said get your Buenos Dias going. That's right. Now,
yeah.
She actually encourages people who are in business and are not necessarily bilingual, trilingual, to learn at least the greetings when you're doing business. As a business owner, the encouragement is to greet your customers in their native language. So you notice that when she starts her show, she opens up with greetings. I don't know if one of the words is ni hao ma, but she says even in ending the show, she would say the leaving greeting like adios. Hasta luego, something like that, and bonjour when she opens up. So she's actually practicing that, and certainly, I think it's is it World Changers, Global, what's the name of her?
Oh, yeah, you're talking
Global.
About Naima. Yeah, Naima
Global
opens
changers.
Up. You're right. She opens up her show and closes her show. You're absolutely right.
So because keep in mind, that's a business etiquette. So now we have not necessarily been, it hasn't really been promoted, but just consider, and I've told people this, even since before I met Niyama, but she was certainly an encouragement to encourage business owners, and now we're talking about landlords, to greet your prospective, clients, tenants in Spanish, greet them in Spanish. And then, of course, it would be great if you had the skill of communicating with them. Instead of, Google Translate is, it can be okay, but it can be a hit or miss. Google is not accurate because anyone can contribute to it. They have a disclaimer. And they were sued one time. I don't know if I shared this story. Google was sued because a word was translated. A very large organization in, I think, Mexico. They have this tomato fest. So the word for tomato is not syndrome, but the flyers went all the way out. The flyers went out, and this organization sued Google. Now, keep in mind, we know office etiquette, too. When you put a document out, you want maybe another set of eyes to go over it. However, I don't know how the lawsuit went. I'm going to do that while we're on this call. I'm going to look that up to see what came of that lawsuit. So keep in mind, I'll share that story. Well, the thing is, Google is not accurate. And I believe the disclaimer wasn't up prior to that lawsuit, but it was a big lawsuit. Well, the word that they gave is the name of a female body part. So the organization was embarrassing. Keep in mind, we all have heard of the tomato fest. We've seen pictures. We know that. So it was a big, big deal. And I do fault the office workers. However, they relied, since they Google put it out as public information, they were somewhat liable, So, of course, the disclaimer is up there now. So we use other online resources, which you'll find out when we start. When are we going to start the Spanish for Landlords, Brother Lee?
As soon as you want.
Is that going to be next week?
Yeah, yeah, for Monday if you want.
Okay. So
yeah,
now.
Oh, you know what? This weekend I'll give you the date for that.
All right. So we're going to set up.
Yeah, because I'm going to have to base it on your schedule.
Yeah, well, 9:30 is perfect. So now one thing about it, 9:30 Chicago time, Central time, and we're going to teach landlords how to communicate with their be able to produce an ad in Spanish, and you're going to be able to let others know that English
Well, hold
on.
Really, 9:30 Chicago time is 10:30 Eastern time where I'm at.
Yeah, so now what happens is when you see the schedule, it's going to be an hour ahead because the schedule that we've been putting out, it says 10:30, but it's going to be for Chicago area central
it's
United States time. It's going to be 9:30, just an hour ahead.
Yeah, because you're in Central Time, yeah.
Yes, yes. So I'm really excited about that. So the landlords are going to learn, and business owners can join the class as well, business owners. I would need you guys to go ahead and register, so I have your contact information. Of course, we'll give the website and so forth. Feel free to call in. However, we want to stay in contact with you because we're going to give follow-up bonuses. So the follow-up bonuses will be once you learn how to communicate your ad, you're going to create your own ad. And we're not going to use Google, but I'll reveal that on Monday. Yeah, so they're accurate, more accurate. They're going to be accurate. Online resources that I'll share with you. I do share them in my classrooms, although I use hard copy textbooks and other resources. We do use online technology as well, but we do not use Google because it's like Wikipedia, just to be clear. It's like Wikipedia where anyone can actually just share their translations, or with Wikipedia they can share their version of a story. So Wikipedia has a disclaimer, and it's been there for years. It says anyone can contribute, do you have a correction, things like that. So when it comes down to Google, some things may be correct, but keep in mind, you're talking about different cultures of people, different Latinos that speak Spanish, but it may vary. So some words are offensive, actually. So these are things that you'll learn as far as the Spanish-speaking culture. Some things are offensive, and then you must pronounce things correctly. Because for years, since high school, I was one of my favorite words was the word for kitchen. But the word for kitchen is cocina. And because I was so used to the C and the I making the ch sound in English, I mispronounced when I was an adult volunteering at a multicultural school. And I said cochina, which is an offensive word. I was with a group of parents encouraging them, Spanish-speaking parents, to just get involved with the schools. And they actually made fun of me, but it was fun, too, in a way. I said, ponen la cocina. And they said, what did you just say? This one father. I said, ponen la cocina. He said, and they started laughing, the mothers, because the fathers were just starting to come out. I kid you not. The one lady, she tapped me on the shoulder. She said, do you know what you just said? I said, well, put it in the kitchen. Because they were wondering where to put the dishes that we needed to clean. And so the woman said, no, you just said, that means filthy pig. So literally, I was calling them filthy pigs without knowing it. So if someone had overheard me say cochina, they'd have thought I was, having tongue lashing somebody. So I have lots of stories that will actually help us to remember. I allow my students to also come up with ways to remember. We don't do regular memorization techniques. We do, we do memorization techniques, but we don't do drills in my classes because we're actually speaking and we're connecting the memorization to something that relates to us. For one, I love pizza. So the word piso in Spanish means floor now because I love pizza so much. If my pizza hits the floor, el piso, then I'm, and one student actually said, I said, what would you relate that word to? I was at DeSable High School. So one student said, pissed off. I said, oh, no. okay. Because I don't know if curse words were going to come out. I said, well, yeah, I piso could mean that, but yeah, my word is pizza, but it can remind you of that word. Just don't say it in our classroom aloud. we have lots of words. There are over 3,000 cognates, so we'll share some of those. And cognates are words that are sound the same in another language. Your language, being English, you're going to think of words and learn words and just consider words that are used. You just pronounce them the Spanish way, and some letters of those words will vary, such as computadora. You use it to create documents. You might be on your computadora right now. I'm on my phone, which is a mini computadora, which is what, Brother L.A.? Computadora is a what?
A computer.
There you go. So
computer,
we know telefono. Yeah, we know telefono, which is telephone. We've all been knowing that for years, right, since grade school. So, yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. It's very engaging, and it's speed Spanish. So we're only going to do half hour. My classes are usually one-hour sessions. Speed Spanish, 15 minutes of instruction. We're going to be taking notes, and we're going to engage on what we're learning. So as I explain, we're going to be taking notes. So I explain along the way as well. So generally, I will answer most questions before you, by the time I'm done with the actual lesson. So the 15-minute Q&A, if let's say you had want to learn to pronounce something, I do have sessions, and I'll be uploading some videos on how to roll the R, the different variations in the letters and things like that. So the letters, we do go over in my regular lessons. I do an orientation where we go over different things, but we don't stay stuck on what I call basics because it's an intro conversational course. So we're going to go full speed ahead, and it's Spanish boot camp, not boot camp, because people get, you know, intimidated when I say boot camp, but it's a boot camp. We're giving you a boost, those who had Spanish and are not fluent. This is like a refresher course for you. So we're going to give you a boost, and keep in mind, after day one, we're going full speed ahead. Don't be afraid because we're going to learn together. Yes, I have a level of fluency, but it's not my native language. So although my great grandmother was French, so it's an inherited trait. My mother spoke Spanish, inherited the trait as well. So when it comes down to it, and psychologists know what that means. It just means that gifts and talents and skills are generally passed on to generations after. So, yeah, we're going to have some fun. You're going to dial 773-449-8839. Again, 773-449-8839. It kind of rhymes. 773-449-8839. And you're just going to text, I am a scholar. I'm a scholar, and you're just going to go into our contact database. I'll send you a link so that you could register online and also have access to the schedule, different times and different resources connected to tutoring as well. So tutoring in Spanish. So academic tutoring is offered for free. So, and the Spanish is a bonus. It's just my passion, just like singing is a passion. By the way, let me share our event. Parents can also sign up in La Mañana on tomorrow. They can sign up for free tutoring on tomorrow for parents who qualify for the free tutoring. Sign up. Parents, anyone qualifies, but those that are eligible for the free, it's still low cost. So $10 is the asking donation for the event on tomorrow. Soulstational Saturdays starts tomorrow. We're going to be at Marva Sip and Talk with Lady Reba Soul, which is my stage name. My band will be performing, and then we'll have different artists from across the city performing. Vendors will be there, anyone who wants to set up a vendor table, $35 with the gift to raffle off for our tiny solar build, tiny mobile solar cabin build. So these are tiny houses that, what, 2 to 4 people can live in. And actually it's space enough for individuals to actually live in. So we are still raising funds for that. 773-449-8839, $10 donations. BYOB, bring your own bottle of tea, juice, or spirits. someone else said bring your own blunts. Well, cannabis is legal in Chicago, so there is a room available if someone wants to indulge. So I will be performing a tribute to Phyllis Hyman. So again, you can get 2 tickets and 1 free. Bring 2 guests, come with 2 guests, and one of your guests will be free, or you'll be free. So yeah, we're doing that special. We just want you guys to come and get these benefits that we're offering. Different vendors will have different products. So, yeah, and there's going to be food, music, a live DJ as well. That will be DJ Bossa Nova. You can find him at Chug-A-Lug on Mondays. So, yeah, so after we have our session, some of you guys that are in the Chicago area or that will be here in the Chicago area, we can meet up at Chug-A-Lug on Monday, and we'll see each other in person. So, certainly we look forward to having some fun with that. So now,
okay,
are you going to go? Yeah.
You were asking?
So are you going to go? Yeah, are you going to go to 10:30 today?
Well, no. Well, remember, we're an hour ahead of you.
No, I'm just saying, are you going towards 9:30 to 10:30, just to clarify?
I'm going to wherever time
Monday,
you want us to go.
Okay, and then Monday is going to be 9:30 to 10
for the Spanish. I'll take this weekend so we can fit that in and get our time straight on that for Monday. I'll call you later on today or right after the program. Yeah,
so certainly 9:30 to 10 will be the Spanish, 15 minutes instruction with the lesson, and then 15 minutes Q&A. So that's
okay.
Going to be fun. So have others to call in, guys.
Yeah, we can do that, yeah.
Yeah, let's give them a call number again.
619-768-2945.
And also the number that I gave, if you guys have it written down, I'll send you the schedule as well via text. Also, check us out on Facebook.
Right. And just for people who don't know, with languages, now this is spoken globally, Mandarin Chinese has the most native speakers, 941 million, knocking at the door of 1 billion people that speak Mandarin Chinese. They're number one. But number two is Spanish. 486 people on planet Earth are native Spanish speakers. Of course, we do have different dialects, Mexican Spanish, which I imagine is different from Spanish spoken in the Dominican Republic, versus Castilian Spanish spoken in Spain. And even in Spain, they probably have different dialects.
Well, they do, because you have well, it's a general for the area, but keep in mind, you also have in El Barrio, in the neighborhood, there are different things that are used as well. So keep in mind, there's different levels of literacy. Now, you're speaking worldwide, but in the United States, English being number one, most widely used language, but then Spanish in the United States is actually the second most widely used language. So Spanish is number two. Kind of looking like it'll end up being number one, right? So, but we certainly want to share
on,
that with them.
Yeah, how you look
and
at it, because you got it's a very significant market. You've got a first thing, practically in every local community, there's at least one entirely Spanish speaking newspaper, if not two, but definitely one. And then you've got just nationwide, you got Telemundo and Univision, those networks, and they cover some of that, because I used to watch a show called Laura in America. I don't know if she's still, I got her on, Instagram. But you've got, man, there's one lady, I can see her face, I forgot her name, I have to look her up. She's got a bigger TV audience than Oprah, when Oprah was on. And, basically native Spanish speakers. So it's a significant market that you really can't ignore. So we're glad to have you available as a resource, particularly when it comes to business. Well, like I shared this story on here before. When I was in the D.C. school system, I had a student in high school. Now, this is back in the early 80s. She went to apply for a job at McDonald's in Washington, D.C., and was turned. She didn't get the job. Why? Because she didn't know how to speak English. I mean, not English. She didn't know how to speak Spanish.
Well, to be honest with you, I was discriminated against, too. I've had stories, yeah. Well, when I first separated from my first husband, I was looking for work. We were just separated. He was still paying the rent, thank goodness. And, three children, I was looking for temp work, but they didn't have anything available except bilingual, Spanish, English. And I prayed, and I was like, Lord, I don't want to lie. I don't want to lie and say I speak Spanish. And then, God reminded me, like, okay, you speak Spanish. You speak some Spananish. So just, let them know you do speak some Spanish, right? So it was just, the Spanish that I got from high school and when my uncle introduced me to the language. But I kid you not, my dad gave me some advice. He said, so I went and I said, I did say that I spoke a little Spanish. They saw my, because I had a lot of work with the temp agency, and they saw my consistency, that I had repeat contracts. To work, and this was a temp to perm position. Well, so I get in there, and I'll tell you about the interview a little bit later, because I have stories, something like Steve Harvey, very inspirational story.
Okay.
But I did was I practiced on the job. My late father, the very wise Robert Booz, he actually encouraged me to learn, practice more while I was on the job. And then my husband was paying for beauty school. I remember the lady who was at the beauty college. I called out to her. So I said, as I did in high school, I asked my Spanish-speaking friends at Bogan High School to share their Spanish with me as well. And then I was an honors Spanish student, so I was familiar with the grammar structure. So it was easier for me to pick it up, but I wasn't using it as much, just, small things. So here I am. I go to the interview. Well, I got to share a story. So I go to the interview. I did, I applied for the position. I told the agency, yes, I want to take that position. It was a bilingual receptionist position. So I'm like, okay, Lord, I'm going to step on faith. So I get to the office location. So I greet the CEO, Lucy Aquino, I'll never forget, a very beautiful company called HispanoCare, ironically, right? HispanoCare, LatinoCare was for the seniors. So the CEO took me and, I worked, the phone, she explained. Someone else was on the phone. Monica was on the phone. And so we ended up having just, an icebreaker lunch. She ordered what I wanted to have, and she said, we're speaking in English and everything, and so we're done, and we just hit it off really good. She learned that I was a singer. She encouraged me to go to DePaul, which I should have done. She said, you can actually just apply using your skills. She said, you can actually use your languages to apply, you know, sing a song in English and another language. They have a scholarship for that. And so now we're ending the luncheon. We've gotten to know each other. Her son was actually attending, Lucy's son was actually attending DePaul at the time. So he was in there on a scholarship. So she said, well, welcome aboard, Reba. And because I hit it off with my personality, but kids, you're not. She says, well, you just know that you're going to, you know, contest in English and then transfer it to the calls to Monica. So she, maybe she picked up that I wasn't as fluent in Spanish. And then conteste, if you're in a contest, like let's say Family Feud, if you're in a contest, when you hit the buzzer, what are you going to do for the question? You're going to do what?
Well, you hit the buzzer, you answer. I mean, you know,
answer. Yeah, you're going to answer the question. So the word contestar means to answer. And so I asked her, she said, conteste in English, and then just transfer it to Monica. So she really wanted me. So she was telling me, I said, conteste, I was looking confused, and I'm trying to keep my cool, but I was like, I couldn't think of it fast enough what the word conteste means. So she was telling me to answer the phones in English, conteste in English. I heard that part, I knew that was English. Conteste in English and then transfer it to Monica. Now, I was just so nervous, I couldn't even put two and two together just at that moment. And I was so hot. She said, answer. She said, answer the phone. She didn't even blink one eye. She was okay. She had pretty much, I guess, sized me up. She knew that I had the Spanish from high school. But yes, I ended up following my dad's advice. I knew how to answer the phones in Spanish and to tell them that I was bien llamada más tarde. So Karen over at the beauty school that I attended, she helped me with that phrase. And then I was doing my studying. You know, I was doing my studying and speaking, you know, just connecting with my Spanish-speaking friends from high school and people that I knew. One young lady that went to beauty school with me who was Latina, she was just hard on me, though. The word for rice is arroz. And so she was forcing me. I think she was teasing me. Because, you know, arroz, I'm rolling both R's, right? So let me see a word that has just one R. Pero. You can pronounce the R. Pero means but. P-E-R-O. But. B-U-T.
Oh, but. Pero. Okay, excuse me. I'm thinking about another language.
So I hope you're taking notes. I hope you guys are taking notes. There's just a few things I want to share with my stories. And so she's talking about arroz. I don't know if we had chicken and rice for lunch or whatever, but that's the word for rice. And so she kept saying arroz. She was from Mexico. She was like, no, you got to say arroz, arroz, arroz. And I'm like, arroz, arroz. She's like, no, it's arroz. And she didn't crack a smile, so I'm thinking she's serious. So later in the years, and actually recently, when I share that story, they're like, no, it's arroz. You're pronouncing it correctly. And so if I find, I think her name was Esmeralda. Esmeralda.
Well, is that a distinction of, you know, because I mean, they do have different dialects. English
exactly.
Probably has at least 15 or 20 dialects.
And that's what you're talking about. That's what people don't realize. Mm-hmm. Dialect actually refers to certain words or how words are pronounced. So dialects is just the variations. It's the same language. So when we say different dialects, it does not mean that it's a different language. It's still Spanish. They're just different variations in the speech, the dialect. So that's correct. Yeah. She was messing with me, I'm sure. If you're out there somewhere, and I'm actually going to go into our Bogan alumni page, and I'm going to look for – no, that was the beauty school. Find her and have her reach out to me and say, now, why are you playing with me like that? Because, you know, it was like maybe a couple more Spanish speakers there, but she was just like – she didn't crack a smile. It was just really – it was almost tormenting me, you know. And I was literally done with it, and she was like, remember, arroz. I'm like, uh-huh, she's teasing me. So a lot of fun, but I teach how to speak with the native speaker. Phrases like, como se dice, which you and I have, it means how do you say it. You and I have gone over that. Como se dice means how do you say it. So you're going to learn what I call power phrases. power phrases. So I coined that term. If you hear anybody saying it, think of Reba La Maestra, which means Reba the teacher, or Reba the teacher. In English, Reba La Maestra in Spanish. Certainly, power phrases empower you to be able to communicate in Spanish as you're learning. So, ¿cómo se deletrear? How do you spell it? A lot of people know, habla más despacio, which means what, Brother L.A.? Habla más despacio.
I have forgotten.
Habla means to speak, right?
Yeah, you're right. Habla means to speak. H-A,
Habla más despacio.
What's that second?
Habla más despacio.
Did you say más?
Yeah, más. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, más.
So then, habla means
more.
Speak. Now, if you speak, if you're speaking Spanish and I don't understand you, and I just want you to, you know, just be patient with me. Despacio. Think of spacio, S-P-A-C-O. Despacio is a full word, D-E-S-P-A-C-I-O. Think of space. So space, despacio, space, space out your words. If you're spacing out your words, you're speaking more slowly. So I just gave you a memorization technique right there. So despacio means slowly.
Hablo spas demasio.
The H is silent in Spanish. Habla. The H is silent.
Habla.
Always.
Habla.
Habla. Mm-hmm.
Just
so,
like the,
yeah,
J is always silent.
No, it's not. It has the H sound. J is the letter Jota.
Okay, all right. You're saying,
Jota.
H is silent, but
J
has
Jota.
The H sound.
It certainly
like
does. Jota is the word for J. That's why we should, if we think of the letters of the alphabet, the Spanish alphabet, its name is, the J is, its name, Spanish name is Jota. So that's a clue that Jota has the H sound. J-O-T-A, Jota. The J has the H sound. So they're cousins, put it that way. So the J took
Which
the sound from
me,
the H. That's
to,
what I, the J, look,
I
tell my preschoolers,
my
I say,
alphabet.
Well, I mean, needless to say, let's practice that. You know, maybe off the air, I'll work with you. So now listen, my preschoolers, I say, the J is borrowing the H sound. The J has the H sound. The J is borrowing the H sound. So J, the H, it has no sound right now. It does not have a sound. And maybe the H gave the sound away to J. I said, isn't that nice? So I work with my preschoolers because keep in mind, when I'm having them, my preschoolers can spell, so I will definitely, I'm going to send you some video links. Matter of fact, my website, it's on the blackyouthmetropolis.com as well as readalamaestra.com. You'll see some videos if you go to FHA, and that's one of the schools where I taught. It was a private school where I taught. You'll see some videos of the children speaking Spanish. And my YouTube channel, I do have several. If you Google Reba the teacher, you'll see some of my, or Reba La Maestra, you'll see some of my Spanish students that I had at those times speaking Spanish. Yeah.
Okay.
And one young man, he was counting all the way up to 1,000,000 Spanish. He was really good. Yeah.
Well,
so all of them practice. So all of them, they have partners and things like that. So we're
right now.
Yeah. So when we go and do our when we do our breakout sessions, that they'll do the practice. Ironically, I have a call. I normally don't call in on this number. I'm gonna just send a quick text. That's my son. We are getting ready to. Oh, Brother L.A., I invited you to a webinar at 11 o'clock if you don't have the Zoom link. Then,
send it to me on what you call it, Clubhouse. Not Clubhouse.
I don't actually have it.
No, not Clubhouse.
WhatsApp.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. All right, now, switching gears. Are we prepared to switch gears now, Reba?
Certainly. Like last fast five.
Okay. All right, now, today's title of the podcast is 100, but it's not the only. But that's the only thing I thought of when I wrote that. The $175,000 tax strategy and solution. I got to correct that. Anyway, learning Spanish is one strategy because, you know, when you owe somebody, when you owe the government or anybody $175,000 and you don't have it, you got to think, who has it? So, the, as I read from the United States Treasury Bureau, of a Treasury Department, rather, just with Latino businesses in the United States, they do over $100 billion a year. Over $800 billion a year. So now it would be good if you learn how to speak just a little Spanish to tap in on that $100 billion, because, you know, you owe $175,000, but they've got over $800 billion. So I would say that is one strategy. Once again, not the only strategy to tap into that market. Of course, if you want to tap into the Patel market here in the United States, which they do motels. Hotels, they do some hotels, too, but they do a lot of motels. Then learning Hindi, but we're not getting to that on this program. Not yet. But I'm just saying, so it might be good to learn that language. For, you know, if you want to reduce that tax bill. Now, one strategy before we go over to 309, all right, here's the deal. Now, on Blog Talk, we have podcasts, all right? Yesterday, we had eight scheduled. Like today, we got eight scheduled. However, Blog Talk, which is overall good. That's why I've been using them for 10 and a half consecutive years. Like yesterday, we did, out of the eight, we were able to do three. Because for the other five, there were tech issues, not on our fault, but Blog Talk was working out things. And if you've been around Blog Talk a little bit, you know, for a little bit, you know, sometimes they're 100%. Sometimes they're not, but they're more on than off. So yesterday, we were in the studio. Well, tried to get into the studio. That's the best way. We tried to get into the studio. Out of the eight times, we were only able to get in the studio three times. So we did this one, and then we did two more. But today, we didn't add any other new podcasts on. We still had the same eight, which we had listed or announced yesterday. So we'll see how many numbers, see if we can get up. I mean, if Blog Talk will let us in with no technical problems. But even with yesterday, we tripled what we did 2 weeks ago, because typically we just did one a day, Monday through Friday. If Blog Talk was down at the time we were on for 10 and a half years, then, you know, sometimes we would miss days. But yesterday we were able to do at least three out of the eight. So hopefully today we can do eight out of the eight that we already have planned scheduled, because on Monday, we'll probably add on two more. And on top of that, by Monday, if you don't hear us at a set time for that specific podcast, we're going to, I guess, run a backup with Clubhouse. And then eventually Facebook Live, and then, of course, StreamYard, where we can do, hopefully by September 1st. You know, if we do StreamYard, then we can hit, you know, if you don't catch us here on Blog Talk, with StreamYard, you can catch us on four or five other platforms at the same time. So if one's out, you can catch us on, we'll let you know what those platforms are by September 1st, which is a couple of weeks away, a little bit over 2 weeks, 2 weeks and some change away. So that's the story on that. So same schedule as yesterday. And we, like I said, if we can't get into the studio with Blog Talk, with tech, not on our fault. We got to go through them. They're our gatekeepers. So, but like Monday and Tuesday, we're able to do it. So anyway, let's see, 309 area code. Your mic is open. 309, mic is open. Okay, Chris probably could have stepped away for a moment. Also, well, you know, while we're waiting on him. One strategy, now let's go back to this lady with the $175,000 tax problem. More than likely, now this is a strategy. Open up a family store. If you look at many of the immigrant families that have come to a foreign land, just not the United States, they've opened up a family business. Because maybe there were some barriers that, you know, maybe enough that they didn't know. I'll give a good example, two good examples. That the family members' English, in this case, I'm going to use two places, United States and Uganda. They've come to the country, and maybe the only language they knew how to speak was Hindi at the time. You know, people come over from India or Pakistan. They just knew Hindi. They didn't know any English. But they needed money. So the solution, the strategy, in order to pay the rent, to eat, to sustain themselves financially, is to open up a family business. Doing what? Some, they know how to cook. And they will open up a ethnic food restaurant based on what they know how to do, cook the ethnic food from where it came from. Chinese food, Japanese food. Maybe some were merchants in their home country, and they would open up over here or in Uganda, they would open up a business selling potato chips, bread, sodas, stamps, whatever you might find in a convenience store or gas station. Maybe they weren't good at speaking English, but they knew how to fix cars, so they would open up a garage. So one strategy to knock out a high tax bill is open up a business knowing what you already know, or some close family member or friend they might know, and you two partner out and figure it out that way. Because you have some people that take your, if you go to a Chinese food carryout, there's some people that are standing that take your order. They know how to count, and they know what number 15 is, or they know enough English where they can understand what you're saying when you say egg foo young or fried rice. They know that much English. And a lot of those businesses make over $1 million a year. Just little family type businesses. I for instance, so I put it this way. Attached to each and every one of these podcasts, now this will be an opportunity for you guys where you can make some money. Because there'll be for each podcast that we have on here, including this one, there'll be a store connected to it. With, you know, a certain amount of items, some of those items that you'll pick, that'll go in the store, and that's how these podcasts will be making money. I didn't do that for the first 10 and a half years. We're doing it now. Okay. So we're going to have a store connected to each one of our podcasts. And I know one store, one item that'll be in the stores, because like I said, you guys will be picking items that'll go in these stores too. Quilts. My mother, you know, she passed on 5 years ago, transitioned 5 years ago. She knew how to make quilts. I don't know. Now, I got the equipment, and I got the material to know how to make quilts, but I don't know how to make them. So I got a call with one of my cousins later on today, and I'm going to say, look, he actively makes quilts. So that's one of the items that we're going to have to sell, quilts. Bedware. So, as far, and we'll have other things too. But like I say, each and every podcast will have a store. So, if you got an item and you think you can fit into one of those stores, let me know and we'll get into that. And but those are strategies. Open up a family store or a family business. Start one of them. And that can be a strategy to eliminate the debt, be it tax or whatever you might owe. Now, let's see. Chris, are you back?
I've been here.
Okay.
I'm taking my question this morning.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, what do you got for us as far as what you do?
Well, I have a whole bunch of blueprints that are being put on the website right now, so people will be able to. We will do customization, of course, anything that you want, but we're going to have models and a lot of them, and I'm excited about that. And we're going to have them from 100 square feet and up, and there's going to be multiple ones for each one, so. Whatever it is you need in your family, up to whatever it, you can get. Here's some news that happened yesterday. On my 3 acres that I have in Bloomington, I found out that they're going to let me build a house on it, one house, since it's all on one deed. And I'm going to meet the setbacks from the road and the easements on the sides and the rear that is set up for the standard of our town. But we're going to build a 200 by 200 house. It'll be 40,000 square feet. And I'm going to do it with a passive solar greenhouse on top of it. And I spoke with the college right down the street if they would for their cafeteria. And they said yes. So this will be a sustainable situation. I'm going to make it an Airbnb short-term rental. And I'm going to build the largest house in the area here. There ain't no other house 40,000 square feet around here.
It's a big one. Now, what's the business plan or model for it?
Well, $100 a day per room is $10,000 a day. That's $300,000 a month, not including what the greenhouse is going to do.
Okay. Well, that would definitely knock out a lot of tax bills with that kind of cash flow.
Oh, yeah. And it's going to cost about $3 million to build it to $4 million. So I put a $4 million budget on it. And if it brings in $300,000 a month, it's almost a one-year payoff. And it will have in-house people working there, so there will be people living there that stay on site. And, yeah, I made the comment that if they weren't going to let me build a community, I'm just going to build one big monstrosity house. So they said yes to me yesterday that I could build the largest house around here. So
how long would that take to about how long would that take to build?
Hopefully we will have all the walls and everything standing in a day. The steel framing union, I wound up getting support from the unions across the country. And right now there's 4 million people that I've got on the end of an email. And here in our community, I mean, if we have a thriving union, workers. So we're going to get them to come over and spend a Saturday, and we're going to do like the Amish, and we're going to do a barn raising. Boom, and the house is going to be up. So hopefully under 30 days, it should be ready to occupy. After we break ground, I'm going to get the groundwork done. But we're putting it on a slab. So everything about it, it's kind of a no-brainer that just, here you go, let's do it. And like I said, I'm going to build a house so big that every house in the entire community in a 3-block radius can be inside of it.
Okay, well, that should be, that'll be, you'll get a lot of business because it's a college, with the location of it. I know it'll be listed on Airbnb.
Well, we've got Illinois State University and Illinois Wesleyan that is within 5 blocks of this house. And those parents will book their space in there, a year in advance.
Right.
So it'll keep a steady flow, but also we have a lot of people that come in and out of this community for work. So to me, it's a no-brainer when I look at spending $200 for a motel when you can live in this mansion. It's not that hard for them to fathom that that's where they'd rather go that direction. Plus, it'll have a commercial kitchen, and I'm going to set it up with a ballroom right in the middle, so the foyer would come into a great room, and then off to the side will be a ballroom. And the ballroom, I'll have music going there every night.
Okay, all right.
Artists
well.
To be able to show their art. I've got an art studio that we're going to display the art so people can buy that.
How many rooms? You say it'll be 100 rooms that you can rent in that place?
Yeah, 100 rooms. Yep.
Well, okay, that's serious cash flow. Yeah, that's talk about compounding. That's a demonstration of it.
Yeah, I'm gonna have a conversation today with a concrete form company that I partnered with last year, and I'm going to ask them if they want to come in and actually do all the outside walls. And if they do, I have a perfect marriage to concrete, so I have no problem with it. But if they do that, it gives me an R value and a bomb value. So I am building a fortress here. And so it's not only about the, you know, building it green and sustainable, but building it to where if something does happen, and it's going to at some point, I might have a safe spot for a mill. But, you know, we all have to look at how do we want to keep it.
In a place that big, how many bathrooms and how many kitchens?
I'm going to do a half bath for every bedroom. So every bedroom will have a half bath in. You can go to the bathroom and do your business without having to deal with someone else. But then there will be a section that will be all independent showers, and that'll be the central location for the showers. But I'm not going to put a full bathroom in each one of them. I'm just going to do a half bath so that people can go to the bathroom and not have to share that part.
Well, that's people like that, their own bathroom space. Kitchen, how are you doing that?
Oh, that'll be a full commercial kitchen. I'm gonna deck that dude out, and it'll be a culinary arts situation to where if someone does come and stay and they're just visiting, they can actually take courses and help cook the meals that the people are going to eat and learn how to go home and cook the meals themselves or move toward the culinary side of life. And that's because we're going to do all the food being grown right there on the premises. And I'm going to work it like a bed and breakfast.
Okay, good. Good. You know what's interesting, particularly the concept of bed and breakfast, when God knows, like our grandparents and great-grandparents, I mean, they put kids through college, paid off the mortgage and all that, before it got, the term got bed and breakfast. And now, local government or bureaucracy, you got to get a license to set up a bed and breakfast. Stuff like that now. At one time, all of that was unregulated. And then in some cases, he makes it prohibitive. But where it is not prohibitive, it's a good way still to earn some money.
Well, you know, I had thought about it, and I went to the city and I used these words. So I'm gonna show you guys an example of don't use these words. I said, could I build one big house and could I set it up as transitional housing? They came back to me and said no. And I said, and as soon as they said no, I was already prepared. And I said, I know I cussed you when I said that. I said, so how about Airbnb? And they said, yep, no problem. We can do short-term rental. That was exactly how that went down.
Tiny house. A lot of people shoot themselves in the foot when they go in and the permits off or whatever, and then, can I build a tiny house? And no. But if you use a different term,
yeah,
backyard studio, playhouse for the kids, you know, she shed, or a celery dwelling unit, which all of those, that's what they are, you'll get a yes. But in some places, there's no zoning. But typically, those are more remote areas. So, yeah, in a place
it's
like
crazy.
Cook County, they're going to make you pull
right.
a permit. Because of the density, you know, Cook County's got over, Jesus, what, over 4 million people that live in Cook County? I mean, Chicago's got, what, 3 million, I think? Reba, what's the population of Chicago, you know? If you're there.
I know they had over 100,000 homeless and immigrants. I do know that just back in October, and that number was growing, 1,250 a day just coming in on the buses.
That's a hot market. And somebody's making money with them because they eat.
The governor, he owns this big high-rise hotel downtown, and he made $350 million renting that to the immigrants and gave them all the money to pay them.
Cook County has a population of over 5 million people. That's a lot of folks. When I was up there, I met somebody once from Naperville. I heard Naperville's nice. I haven't been there, but I heard it's nice. Let's see. Now, one county that me, Reba, and Pleasant Stevens went through one day, it was my first time going in. Kankakee County, and that has a population of 107,000 people. Cook County is not 5 million people. That's a lot of people in one county. Matter of fact, that county has more people than probably about 15, 20 states in the United States. Oklahoma has 4 million people. Kankakee's got a million more people than the state of Oklahoma. It's got more people than more than Wyoming. Let me look that up right now. Let's see. Population of states. Rankings. Okay, let's take a look at that. List of United States and territories by population. All right, Cook County, Illinois is on par with the entire state of Alabama. They've got a little bit over 5 million people. Now, Cook County, Illinois has more than the entire state of, I'm going to name these by one. They have more people than the entire Louisiana, Kentucky, Oregon, Oklahoma, all those have 4 million people. Connecticut, 3 million people. Utah, Iowa, the territory of Puerto Rico with a little bit over 3 million people. Cook County, Illinois has more people than the entire state of Nevada, Arkansas, Kansas, Mississippi, New Mexico, Nebraska, Idaho, West Virginia, New Hampshire, Maine, and Maine geographically is huge. Montana is huge. Rhode Island, Delaware, South Dakota, has more people than the state of Alaska, and Alaska takes a percentage. Matter of fact, if you do a comparison map of Alaska, with the islands included of Alaska, it can go from coast to coast in the continental states. Cook County people in Alaska, well, Washington, D.C. is not that big. Vermont, Wyoming, which Wyoming is pretty big geographically, bigger than Guam, U.S. Virgin Islands, American Samoa, and the Northern Mariana. That's a lot of people in Cook County.
That is definitely a lot of people. And when you look at countries and states that everybody's piled in, and it comes to that chessboard, scenario you came up with on here, the two squares of the chessboard. They go straight up.
That's why
yeah,
I look
crazy.
Matter of fact, if I were to, this is right, least populated county in Illinois. All right, now the last time I was up there, we went to Kankakee. That's got 100,000 people. But, okay, wait a minute. Least. All right, what county in Illinois has the lowest population? And that would be Hardin County. And Hardin County, where is that located? All right, they've got a population. All right, wait a minute. I pressed the wrong button. Okay, wait a minute. Let's see. I want it least populated, not list. That's right. Counties with the least population. Well, Hardin County has a population of 4,300 people. Looks like Hardin County is the least populated. Let's see, Hardin County, Illinois. Okay, according to Wikipedia, Hardin County, Illinois, the bottom of the state, or practically at the bottom of Illinois, has a population of the 20 of 3,649. Making it the least populous county in Illinois. So, this is how I go looking for towns. And then let's look at communities in Hardin County. They have one city in Hardin County, Illinois, Rosecler, Illinois, which is the county seat, I believe. They have 980 people. That's Mayberry. That, you know what, Chris and Reeve, that's what I look for. I look for Mayberries, little towns where everybody knows everybody. Now, here's a place called Cave Narok, Illinois, which is in that county. And Cave Narok, Illinois, we won't forget that name, has 288 people. No, excuse me, 228 people. Elizabethtown, Illinois. Oh, this is Mayberry. 220 people live there. These are places that, that don't make the news, crime to them is somebody egg somebody's home or something like that. Then they got, all right, Lover's Corner, Illinois, which is an unincorporated community. Oh, man, they don't even list their population. So typically when you find a town that they don't list the population, typically that's, a lot of times that's under 100 people. There's Rock Creek, Illinois. They don't list their population either. So if you feel a little bit crowded in Cook, you might want to Hardin County, Illinois, and explore your options.
Well, it definitely explains why there's so much corruption in Chicago when you think about that there's a population that's more than states have and countries, and they're all greedy and on top of each other, getting and reaching for as much as they can reach for.
Right. Well, matter of fact, there's a town, it's in Cook County, where there's a corruption case, or it's brewing up to be one, of, man, what's the name of that little town? It's in Cook County. I was just talking to somebody about it yesterday. Hold on, I got to look it up now. Let's see. I'll put it in. Allegedly corrupt. Mayor. Because she Dalton, Illinois. That's it. Dalton, Illinois. Let's see. What's happening in Dalton here? Dalton, Illinois. And on that. Well, the more people, you know, the more competitive it is. It's the, you know, the law of supply and demand. Dalton, Illinois. Dalton is a village. Oh, let me let the page populate. All right. Dalton is a village in Cook County, Illinois, and has a population of 21,426 as of the 2020 census. I don't think she's been officially charged with any crime at the moment. And I don't know if she stepped down from office, but the mayor, well, I read it from Wikipedia because I don't want to get in trouble. They say allegations, now this is Wikipedia's words, not mine, allegations of misspending and harassment. In November 2023, WGN News published a two-part series of articles alleging widespread misspending and harassment of political opponents by the mayor, Tiffany Hainert, or Hainert, rather, on February 20th, 2024, as reported that the FBI investigation had launched into a probe of alleged misconduct by Mayor Hainert. So, to my knowledge, she has not been arrested or anything. They're just investigating.
Hello, Brother LA, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Oh, sorry about the background noise. I'm actually headed to pick up my grands and my son. I just wanted to let you know I actually am going to be signing off because I got the 1110 call that I invited you to. Certainly, Chris, I can send you the link as well. So it's a new business that I'm launching to help small businesses. So I'm going to be logging off. And I did have it muted when you were, I was trying to get out of the door when you called my name, but I've been listening in. So I really like what you're doing, Chris. And I will talk to you guys soon.
Okay. All right, Reba, we're about to log off anyway. So because it's 3 minutes after 12 where I'm at. And as a matter of fact, that means going to come up within this hour. So let me sign off, everybody. See you guys. Well, no, tomorrow is Friday. Have a great weekend. See you guys on a Zoom call in a matter of minutes.